Compassion is my religion, and my purpose will always be love. I'm Neva Kochava. What's happening in your life right now, and how are you feeling? I'd like to talk about feelings, real life issues and difficulties, because you matter. Your life matters, and I want you to know that. I want you to know you're not alone. I believe we're living in a time that society and the cultural climate is crying out. There seems to be so much emphasis on division, anger, and frustration. And it seems to me that so many people are just feeling lost or overwhelmed. Things are changing, and that can create a lot of pressure and uncertainty. There's a rise in mental or emotional, and I think spiritual disorder. Depression, anxiety, fear and isolation. Many are self-medicating or in self-avoidance, and a variety of personal struggles. So I want to talk about three things that greatly impact our lives. That's love, acceptance, and a sense of belonging. I believe these are essential and they're fundamental toward how we view ourselves and life in general. They're the gateway to empathy, compassion, and gratitude. And these are three keys that contribute to our overall well-being and success. How do they impact and shape our lives in one form or another? When we're young, we're mostly vulnerable to our surroundings and to those closest to us. In our early years, our parents or caregivers and others we're close to are generally the ones we mostly observe and gain our sense of trust, love, security, and protection from as well. When those experiences are positive for us, we can gain tremendous confidence and a sense of self-worth. When those experiences are really negative, they can cause us a lot of pain, confusion, a sense of low self-worth, insecurities, fears, and ultimately, a lack of self-love and appreciation. Regardless of the extreme, good or not so good, or even something in between, we all have had some experience within our early years that have impacted us on some level, and we're left with feelings, ideas, and perceptions that usually go unheard and unaddressed. We can go into survival mode, and we just keep going. As we get older, we learn to suppress or ignore some of the deeper wounds or traumas that we've experienced, and mostly, we all do the best we can. Negative words and actions, even negative environments, will become part of our subconscious programming. And while our intentions are often really good, those stored memories along with the suppressed feelings can be the cause of much of the hardships we encounter later on in life. Well, there's someone with shared interests and experiences whose aim is to keep the flame of hope alive and to give meaning and direction of a life that's bigger than one's own. He has an incredible story to share with you about his experiences growing up and how they impacted his life. And the best part, and the part I really want you to hear, is how he has not only come through his difficulties, but I believe he has truly transcended his own life's issues. I have my longtime dear friend with me here right now. His name is Gio Brookhart. He's a fortunate, enlightened soul who has dedicated his daily life to connecting with source energy while practicing love, integrity, gratitude, and mindfulness. He considers these attributes foundational for him as a son, brother, partner, father, neighbor, and as an entrepreneur. And I am so grateful for his heart and his story, because you will gain so much from spending this time with him. Gio, welcome.
Thank you, Neva. It's really good to be here, and I really appreciate this time together. I think the work that you're doing is really powerful, and it's timely. I mean, people are longing for, you know, the truth, and especially in a time of, you know, a pandemic and civil unrest and just a lot of tension, yeah. And people are looking outside themselves for comfort and for consistency and for security, and it's time that we start looking inward, because that's where those truths lie, you know.
Yes, that's so true. I always say we need to heal from the inside out. Mm-hmm. No, it's so important. And I just want to thank you so much for being here for our listeners. I'm very excited to have you on the podcast. And I want to turn it over to you now so we can tune into your heart and become inspired from what you're going to share with us.
Well, my story is I grew up in a dysfunctional home. And I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland in 1970. And both my parents come from a long line of blue-collar workers that struggled with alcohol and drug addiction. And my parents married young and started having children, you know, and I'm the second in line. And growing up, I didn't really have a relationship with my father. He wasn't there much. If he wasn't working, he was, you know, putting bar stools up at night, closing bars down with the people who owned the bars, you know.
Okay.
And so he was never home. And my mother had her own set of issues. She wasn't active in alcoholism or any type of drug addiction, but she had what we found out later on, some serious mental health issues, depression, and diagnosed, you know, bipolar and things like that. So, So you can imagine that, you know, with that, you know, they weren't able to care and connect and provide in a way that was wholesome and loving. Now, they did the best they could with what they had, and I do know that my parents loved their children. They loved us, but it was extremely, it was an anxious environment. Mm. It was a tense environment. There was a lot of anger, and there was some verbal and physical abuse.
Right.
So, you know, growing up in that environment, you lose touch with your sense of self. You don't, you know, you're told to think and feel a certain way.
Right.
And then you're also trained to protect the family secrets from the neighbors. So, you know, you learn to present that everything is okay on the outside, but on the inside, you don't know what you're feeling anymore.
Right.
You know, you don't know who you are. And then, you know, you look to these people to be your protectors and your source of love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's chaotic, and it's unpredictable, and you know, so you don't know. You just get lost in all that. So coming out of that, you know, into my teens, we moved around a lot, and my parents divorced, and my mother has been married several times, and there were, you know, step parents in and out of our lives, and different cities, different towns, different schools, and myself and my two sisters, we were always in conflict. We didn't know how to relate to one another. We had so much anxiety, and so we were taking it out on each other. We just didn't have a way to deal with it. Around 17, I moved out and moved into my car, and because I just couldn't take the verbal or the physical abuse anymore from my father, and I was living with him at the time. And I moved out, and from there, I just, the next 20 years, I lived in a fantasy world. I didn't know how to relate to people very well. I didn't know how to form relationships with people very well. You know, I had, like, always just, like, one friend I couldn't have a group of friends. I couldn't understand how people had friends that were in groups. Like, I just couldn't wrap my head around that. I was very isolated. I kept to myself. Mm-hmm. I have some creative abilities, so I spent a lot of my time, you know, playing music or creating something, you know, going into my own space where I felt safe and I could control those environments. I got married very early and had my only child very early. And I thought maybe, you know, when we had our daughter, that maybe I would get a sense of purpose, some mm-hmm. focus and a vision or a direction. And I didn't. Mm-hmm. I couldn't understand it. I mean, you know, coming out of I've left a lot of things out, but coming out of this mm-hmm. environment and then going into adulthood and still a child and mm-hmm. not being able to identify with myself or my surroundings and then taking on the responsibility of being a parent.
Right.
The only thing that I really had that I felt was of value was naturally I feel deeply. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, I have this relationship with love. It's the one thing that I can trace all the way back to my childhood that I longed for.
That's beautiful.
I think we all do, you know?
We do.
So I floundered for the next probably 16 years of my daughter's life, and I fell deeply into alcoholism and drug addiction.
Mm-hmm. Weren't you exposed to that as an early age, too, though, or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I grew up around active drinking and drugging, mm-hmm. and on my 21st birthday, my father, you know, gave me a plate of cocaine. So I mean, it was normal in
my
home.
So it was the norm, right?
Oh yeah. My father we would do cocaine and methamphetamines and hard liquor with him for 3-4 days at a time. Mm. We would do these long weekend parties, and that was the only time I could connect with him, is mm-hmm. when we were under the influence, at least I thought.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But there was always a part of me that knew that this was so wrong, mm-hmm. and I would always wind up at some point in time pleading with him privately, mm-hmm. this isn't right. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be living like this. Like, this is not a full life.
Right.
And he just couldn't. He would look at me like I was speaking another language. Mm-hmm. And that was difficult as a child, because I think I was trying to save him.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also trying to save myself and my siblings from this destructive behavior.
Right.
And out of that, you know, I have a younger sister who is in and out of dealing with opiates and heroin and things like that. And I have mm-hmm. an older sister who, thankfully, is doing well and mm-hmm. is not engaged in any active, you know, drinking or drugging. But for me, I went into this, and it wasn't every day. It was more like binging,
mm-hmm.
and it was a pattern, mm-hmm. you know. So I would try to be a good husband, try to be a good father. I wanted to do right, and I wanted to find purpose, and I had such self-hatred. And I was so out of touch with myself, and I lacked self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
I literally was just spinning with no direction. And it would build up. The anxiety, the depression would build up, and then I would have to relieve it. And I would always go to the substance abuse. Mm-hmm. You know, I would abuse substances to do that.
Right.
I had reached out, you know, to people when the consequences were kind of getting out of hand in certain areas, in certain times of my life, and you know, they were great and heavy, and I was on the verge of losing my family and many times, and I would reach out and try to get help, but I was always looking for someone to fix me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was looking for someone to say the right thing or do the right thing. You know, I even tried different medications and psychologists and psychiatrists,
mm-hmm.
but I just couldn't find my place.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was damaged,
mm-hmm.
and I was uniquely damaged,
mm-hmm.
and I was a misfit. I mm-hmm. wasn't going to get it, and by the time I hit my mid-30s, I had already spent most of my time away from my daughter than with her.
Mm-hmm.
I had lived in halfway houses, I'd been in detox centers, I'd been in psych wards, I'd been on the street, You know, I tried organized religion. I tried going to pastors and youth pastors, and it seemed like no one really understood me.
Right. That's difficult.
It was really hard. And, you know, and even like my former wife, like I would always say to her, I don't feel like you understand me. Like, because I felt like there was so much good in me, but my behavior wasn't, it was contradicting what I thought was there.
Right.
And I knew it was there, but I couldn't get to it. It was layered.
Yeah. You know, I just want to say this real quick. That's such a deep sense of self-awareness without even being aware that you're aware, you know.
Right.
It's kind of interesting. As you know, I've picked that up a few times, you know, where you have been aware this whole time, you know, throughout your journey. And so I just want to just point that out, because I think you're so incredible. And so sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's good. I appreciate that. And, you know, there's so much I want to say right now, and I'm kind of struggling to, like, pick and choose. But overall, my parents did the best they could.
Right.
They were damaged, and they didn't have, or they didn't realize that they had options. Mm-hmm. They just didn't, they thought that was the way it was, and they just accepted that, and they lived that way, and to great cost. And coming out of that into adulthood, I just had no idea who I was, but I had this longing to be something and to make a difference and to be seen. You know, I wanted to be seen, and I felt like I was looked over. I didn't feel like anyone really saw me.
Right.
And I wanted to connect, and I didn't know how to.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea how to connect with people.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, at like 39, I basically had nothing. I had pretty much lost everything. I was living in an apartment over a garage, and I had separated myself from my former wife and my daughter because I thought, you know, minimize the collateral damage, because I was spiraling. And I had come to a point finally where I realized I can't be these two different people. I can't pretend to be this loving, caring husband and father and productive citizen in society and this church-going man, and then doing drugs and in the woods and in the garage, and I'm spending money we don't have to like numb myself because I'm in so much pain.
Right.
And I don't know how to tell people I'm in this pain because they're done hearing it and they don't understand it, and they're hurting by now because they're exhausted. They don't know what to do with me. I was never physically or verbally abusive. I didn't follow down the same line that I grew up in. You know, my former wife has told me even recently that I was actually a really good father. And
that was beautiful.
You know, she recognized that, and
right.
And a little emotional, but so at 39, I basically just decided I'm going to drink and drug myself and just stay away from everyone.
Right.
I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable. And I walked into this meeting, and it was a 12-step meeting, and I'd gone with a friend, and I heard some things I had never heard before about my struggles with alcoholism and drug addiction, and I had seen evidence that people who were just like me were living what seemed to be fulfilled lives. They seemed like they were awake, and they were happy, and they had a sense of peace about them.
Wow.
And I was attracted to that, because I felt like I had found my tribe in a way.
Right.
Like the rejects and the misfits, the ones that make bad decisions,
right.
You know, the ones that cause havoc in people's lives.
And the beautiful ones.
Yeah, right. And what I thought was really cool is we were in the basement of a church, and going there for some time, I started to think to myself, God showing up in the basement, not in the sanctuary, where people are being really raw and open.
Absolutely.
And they're telling it like it is, and they're not pretending.
Right.
Not saying as a whole the church does this, please don't misunderstand me, but my experience, I felt like a lot of people were pretending to be okay.
Absolutely.
But they weren't really talking to one another about really what was going on in their hearts and minds.
Right.
And I was watching these lives transform in these rooms. So I decided to follow some of the suggestions that were being made, and a few days turned into a few weeks turned into a few months turned into almost a decade now, over a decade of abstinence from any substance or mind-altering drugs. And I thought that was it. Like, I thought, if I could just put the alcohol and the drugs down, everything will be fine. Mm-hmm. And that's not the case. That's not been my experience. Mm-hmm. What I realized was those were symptoms. Those were not the problem. Those are tools that I was using for like a spiritual malady, mm-hmm. a disconnect. Mm-hmm. And so practicing spirituality and learning to take, you know, self-awareness, but like inventories, like to review what are my motives, mm-hmm. like what am I feeling, like mm-hmm. who am I? Like, mm-hmm. I had to learn. I had to be introduced to myself is what I'm trying to say. And it took me probably 2 years of early sobriety before I could actually look myself in the mirror and start to like who was staring back at me.
Wow.
I remember the morning, actually, I was shaving and I looked up and I like just stared into my own eyes and I thought, I belong here.
Wow. Like, that's so beautiful.
Yeah, that was the first time I'd ever felt like that I mattered and it was going to be okay.
Right.
So I moved into adopting these disciplines, which, you know, for me it was prayer, meditation, you know, journaling, reading a lot of literature, and connecting with others who were on the same path of recovery, and trying to be of service when I could with people who were coming in behind me who were trying to also get clean and sober. You know, I learned so much about myself, how much trauma and how much, you know, the healing that I needed and how much I really did not like myself, you know, all those years.
Right. And it's never too late.
No.
You know, it's always perfect. You know, the timing, the way things happen and the way that life presents itself to us is all opportunity, and I think that you took those opportunities more often than you know. You expanded on it, and you've come from where you've been through this journey, and you said you've had an experience of enlightenment from where you were and the things that you were experiencing, and then 10 years into a new lifestyle. What is that? What does that mean?
Well, for me, it was, you know, working through all the ideas and the perspective that I had on myself in life, and realizing first that I could choose other ideas and I could choose other perspectives, that mine weren't the only ones. It wasn't the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so first, just realizing that I had choices and I could explore other ideas and other perspectives was liberating. And then the second part was realizing that it's not outward in. I was looking for everything on the outside to fix me, the people, the places, the things. And it's not that. It's inward out. It's, if I want love, then let it begin with me. If I want to be connected, then let it begin with me. And that would even be just self-love and self-connection. But what I realized is sitting, just being quiet and writing down my intentions, like, who do I really want to be? How do I, it's like redesigning my life. Because once the substances were out of the way and my mind cleared up, I had an opportunity to go, well, what is this going to look like moving forward for me, and what do I want? What is my ideal life for me? And when I wrote all those things down, it was obviously love and connection and compassion and being mindful and being centered and being present, being gentle, being measured, being slow, being calm, being open-minded, you know, being forgiven, forgiving, letting go of my judgments and my resistance towards the world and towards life. Like, I realized the enlightenment part, I call it, was when I realized at 39 years old, I remember I was in a fetal position and I was crying because it hit me how much time I had wasted in my life because I believed these false ideas and these skewed perspectives that I just thought this is the way it was because this is how they said it was. And when I look back on my life and how much time I lost obsessing over daily items that are trivial in nature and fears about things that are out of my control, I was absolutely consumed in that mindset. I wasn't present. I didn't see people, and I wanted to be seen. I didn't hear people, and I wanted to be heard.
Wow.
I couldn't, you know, I couldn't love on people, but I wanted to be loved. You know, like I love the St. Francis prayer, you know, seek to understand rather than to be understood.
Mm-hmm.
It was exactly opposite when I read that prayer.
Wow.
And I thought, I want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to bring it first. So, and how to do that was I had to start with myself. I was led to believe by mainstream religion that this is self-centeredness, that this is wrong.
Right.
But it's not. It's actually the right way to spirituality. It's the right way to connection with a higher power.
Right.
Because if I don't pay attention to what's going on with me and who I am and what I'm feeling, and if I don't take responsibility for my behaviors and my actions and my thoughts, you know, I'm going to project all that onto the world around me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to blame them for that. You know, waking up in the morning, and one of the questions I ask myself every morning is, how do you feel this very moment?
Mm-hmm.
And I write it down.
Oh.
You know, am I full of gratitude? And am I feeling love? And am I giving love? Or am
mm-hmm.
I full of anxiety? And am I fearful
mm-hmm.
about something?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't go out and try to pin that on something in the world that day,
mm-hmm.
you know?
What happens when you write that down? Do you just, do you go through it? Do you pray, meditate?
Yeah.
Or you just... That's how you become aware of yourself in the moment.
Yes. I have found that taking an account, putting pen to paper,
mm-hmm.
about taking a pulse on me every morning, and even sometimes throughout the day,
mm-hmm.
is extremely powerful. You know, there's they say a problem written down is a problem half solved, and I consider I'm the problem. I don't think you're the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the government's the problem. I don't
mm-hmm.
think society as a whole is the problem.
Right.
For me, the only thing I can work on, the only thing I can change is me.
Wow.
That's the extent of my power, is the choices that I make. So when I take inventory, like a business would take an inventory of its stock,
mm-hmm.
and it removes bad goods, it
mm-hmm.
rotates, you know, it's the same thing. I look at, what am I grateful for? And I write that down.
Mm-hmm.
Because gratitude isn't just saying I'm thankful. It's...
Right.
It begins to show in your life.
Right.
It's an action, really. So
mm-hmm.
writing down what I'm grateful for, writing down what I've learned, writing down how I intend to live this day,
mm-hmm.
writing down my dreams and desires, and, you know, it's right there in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a roadmap. I'm telling myself who I am and what I want. And if there's something in there that I don't like about myself, like I want to be more honest.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, you know, stop trying to figure out what, you know, sometimes I still sometimes struggle with, who do you want me to be? Because
mm.
I have this little narrative, perpetual narrative, that's still in the back of my head saying, you're not enough. So reminding myself in the morning that I struggle with, I'm not enough, empowers me to go out there and lead with my weakness.
Mm.
So I can be more humble about that.
Mm-hmm.
I can even say to other guys that maybe are in my path that I'm there to maybe serve,
mm-hmm.
hey, sometimes I don't feel like I'm enough either.
Mm-hmm.
Spent most of my life feeling like I wasn't enough, but I matter, and
mm-hmm.
you matter. And if you're
right.
thinking that you're not enough,
right.
it's just a thought.
Right.
It's not the truth,
right.
you know?
Right.
And you can change that.
Mm.
So writing that stuff down keeps me awake,
mm-hmm.
and it keeps me aware.
Yeah,
and then I take that into prayer and meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And normally my meditation is just to kind of sense
mm-hmm.
feelings in my body and
mm-hmm.
maybe even pay attention sometimes to what's going through my mind
mm-hmm.
and just center back into self and into breath. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, that has been a great practice for relieving anxiety because I have a lot of anxiety
mm-hmm.
I'm an anxious person.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't practice the journaling and the reading and the prayer and the meditation, I begin to wind up,
mm-hmm.
you know, and get off balance a little bit.
Right.
So it's a practice. That's why they call it a practice.
Mm-hmm.
We practice it every day, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Right. Mm-hmm. I think it's just so interesting, again, you know, that your awareness is so powerful. And that's something that I think we can really learn from here because, you know, awareness doesn't always mean that it's on everything that's positive or everything that works for us. Awareness can be on the things that we think or we're taught that we're not supposed to be aware of or not supposed to acknowledge or validate or embrace or feel.
That's right.
And I just love that about, you know, this whole conversation as I'm listening to you. your awareness has been on everything. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the love in you that is calling you to that.
All right.
You know, if that Absolutely. Makes sense.
Oh, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, I mean, today it's really just, I don't have all the answers. I'll never have all the answers. And I don't think that's important.
Right.
I want to be loved, and I want to love. I want to connect, because I think that's our greatest resource or our greatest gift. Mm-hmm. While we have breath in our lungs, is to connect with other humans, to relate with other humans. And I'm seeing that a lot of people aren't very good at it.
Right. It's a big deal.
Yeah. People really do hold back. Yes. And people are afraid to be vulnerable and to open up and mm-hmm. to fully lean in and mm-hmm. to own their awkwardness mm-hmm. or to own their, you know, their nerdiness.
You've said some really powerful things. Vulnerability is something that I believe so many of us avoid because we are afraid. And to fully lean in, to connect with others, Gio, what does that mean?
Well, for me, to fully lean in and to connect with others, I had to first learn to love myself and be okay with myself, to appreciate who I am as a person, and to recognize that I have love to give and that I'm capable of connection. And I had to also learn that I'm not going to do it perfectly. And but, you know, if I want to connect, which I do so badly, and I've always wanted to connect with others, I can talk myself out of it so quickly by these ideas that either have been, you know, I've picked up along the way that I'll be rejected, or I'm not enough, or they won't relate to me, or I won't make any sense, or I'll make a fool of myself. And these are just lies. They're not true. And
right.
So at the expense of not connecting, I listen to these things, I don't get to connect. But by leaning in, that's kind of like leaning into the roller coaster. It's like, okay, we're at the peak of this thing. I'm going to lean into this and ride it and have a blast. Like, I'm just going to do this. And, you know, and I'm going to be okay. Mm-hmm. At the end of it, I'm going to be okay no matter how it's received. I know for me that, at least for myself, I stepped out and I was authentic in who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, here I am, and I want to connect with you.
Right.
And it's that simple.
Right. And, you know, something else that's interesting that I don't know that we think about very often is that when we have those feelings of, I'm not good enough, they're not going to understand me, and, you know, and so we're holding back in our connecting with others, that creates a wall, and it creates an energy that doesn't even allow them to reach out to us when they want to as well. So it does go both ways, and that's why, you know, I do say often that energy is everything and everything is energy.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, for you to be aware of that place where you are right then, you know, that's being present.
Mm-hmm.
It's allowing you to choose, and you're always choosing love, and I so appreciate that about you.
Thank you.
And thank you. Let's go back to the relationships you mentioned earlier during a time when you were hurting. Can you elaborate a little on that and what that process was like that led you to a place where you could reconnect with those relationships? And even as I say that, I wonder if that is reconnecting, or is it connecting for the first time?
I like that, Neva. I think it would be proper to say connecting for the first time. You know, the process was that I had to go through a period of awareness and awakening, and I had to be able to look at all these different parts of my life and address each one, and you know, weighing out the assets and the liabilities, and take responsibility for the choices that I've made and some of the damage that I've done, and start the process of rebuilding. So really just taking responsibility and moving forward with a new sense of self and freedom, you know, finding that love for myself, mm-hmm. and the repair and the healing that comes with that. Once I got to a place where I was felt centered and I had something to give, that I was calm and I was present and I was beginning to practice, you know, mindfulness, mm-hmm. and I wanted to establish those meaningful relationships, especially like with my daughter, mm-hmm. That I wasn't able to have when I was sick, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, when I was asleep, mm-hmm. when I couldn't be present and I didn't have anything to give. I felt ready and I was like a new man. And so I made efforts to move towards her.
How is your relationship with her today, and how's your relationship with others as well?
Well, I'm fortunate. You know, we have an incredible bond today. She calls me and asks me about the difficult things in life. Mm-hmm. I get to be the dad that she needs, and she works for me. I sit across from her 4 days a week. And wow. we joke and play and go and have lunch together, and she's helping me build a business. And it's just phenomenal. It's phenomenal. I'm beside myself. Mm-hmm. And and with others, I mean, my relationships are enriched. I know where I end now and where others begin. And I know that, you know, I belong here and I matter, and I know that you do too. And I appreciate the life that's in you. And I appreciate the life that's in me, and I want to honor that. Mm-hmm. So I move towards people now, and I don't hold back.
Mm, that's huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. What is the one thing that you can share with us that's empowered you, that has come back to you through the love that you've been able to give?
Well, I've gotten a lot of good feedback from family members, but I think the one that stands out above all is I've received these little text messages over the last year or so from my daughter that, I'm going to get emotional here, but she tells me how much she loves me and she's grateful that I'm her father and that she has me in her life, and mm-hmm. and she's seen such a tremendous transformation. It's inspired her to walk down this path on her own and try some of these principles out and try these spiritual practices out. A few months ago, I didn't expect this, but we were with a bunch of people, and she just kind of made this public announcement that I was her hero, and she was extremely inspired by my life's journey, and she wanted to live fully too, and she has been making those steps, and I've watched her go through a tremendous transformation in the last few months of her life. She's really coming into her authentic self, and she's not holding back anymore.
Right.
And I'm just, that's... What else, what more could a father want, you know?
Right. So, and that is a transcendent life. It's all new. And you've risen above. You've gone beyond the limitations that were before you. And you've taken somebody else with you. That's powerful.
Yeah.
And thank you.
Thank you so much for having me here, Neva. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gio, for sharing your story and your journey with us. And it's so important to realize that we've been through or we're going through something, and that there is the other side. And we're not locked into our experiences or our past, and certainly not defined by them. I think we're actually refined, which allows us to shine so brightly. And that just may be the very light that shows someone else the way. And that's what you've done. Thank you so much again for being with us today.
Thank you.
Remember, you're never alone. Sometimes, reaching out and taking someone's hand is the beginning of a journey. At other times, it's allowing another to take yours. As always, I believe in you. Until next time, Shalom.